You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday morning, August the 23rd. Christopher Hayes writes in the current issue of The Nation about the NAFTA superhighway. It starts, "When completed, the highway will run from Mexico City to Toronto, slicing through the heartland like a dagger sunk into a heifer at the loins and pulled clean to the throat. It will be 4 football fields wide, an expansive gully of concrete, noise, and exhaust, swelled with cars, trucks, trains, and pipelines carrying water, wire, and God knows what else. Through towns large and small it will run, plowing under family farms, subdevelopments, acres of wilderness. Equipped with a high-tech electronic customs monitors, freight from China, offloaded into non-unionized Mexican ports, will travel north, crossing the border with nary a speed bump, bound for Kansas City, where the cheap goods manufactured in booming Far East factories will embark on the final leg of their journey into the nation's Walmarts. And this NAFTA superhighway, as it's called, is just the beginning, the first stage of a long, silent coup aimed at supplanting the sovereign United States with a multinational North American Union. Even as this plot unfolds in slow motion, the mainstream media are silent. Politicians are in denial, yet word is getting out." But then Christopher Hayes goes on to say, "Problem with all this is that there's no such thing as a proposed NAFTA superhighway." What do you think of all this? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Just yesterday during this program on another topic, a caller brought up the plans for the so-called NAFTA superhighway. You may have seen some media coverage about this recently. Lou Dobbs on CNN has broached the topic, certainly floating a lot around the internet. We had a program a while back. It was several months ago now, a pro-con dealing with a Texas highway project that had a lot of people up in arms. Critics said this was the start of this grand plan, this highway expansion project in Texas. What's the truth? What's reality? We'll ask our guest, and we'll welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Christopher Hayes is the Puffin Foundation Writing Fellow at the Nation Institute and a contributing writer for The Nation magazine. His piece, The NAFTA Superhighway, appears in the August 27th issue, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here. I have to tell you, I'm confused. I get emails all the time about this proposed NAFTA superhighway, and mainly from critics who want to stop it. This isn't happening. This doesn't exist, you're saying.
Right. I mean, the short answer is that it doesn't exist, although I'm not surprised you're getting a lot of email about it, because it's a really interesting issue in which there has been a tremendous amount of attention paid, I would say, under the radar and outside the view of the mainstream media and sort of policy elites, and there's a tremendous amount of concern and consternation over it. It's cropping up at a Republican town hall primary get-togethers, and presidential candidates are finding themselves faced with angry questions about it. The short answer is that, as described in kind of the lurid language in the beginning of the article, there's no such plan. A highway of that nature would have to go through a fairly involved bureaucratic process involving the Federal Highway Administration. There is no money appropriated for it, which I think is sort of the crucial aspect of it. There's been no federal dollars, even though there has been a little bit of federal money for that highway in Texas, which I'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. So the sort of constitutive features that would be necessary to make a grand, sort of transcontinental highway of this sort come into being are not there.
Then why is it taking on a life of its own?
Well, I think there's two main reasons. One is that there are a bunch of actual facts, starting with the Trans-Texas Corridor Highway in Texas proposal, and a bunch of other things which I sort of walk through in the article, that when you, you know, if you kind of squeeze them all together and squint at them in the right light, maybe begin to look sort of like this NAFTA superhighway. So it's not like this is completely drawn out of thin air. There's all these sort of disparate facts that if you kind of push them together, you know, you can maybe think that there's something like a NAFTA superhighway.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that I think it persists and it's grown because it gives people a sort of concrete form for very inchoate anxieties about globalization, about 21st century sort of global capitalism, you know, fears about increased integration with Mexico, immigration, terrorism and porous borders, the sort of the status of nationalism, all of these sort of really intense and pungent concerns that people have that don't really get a venue to be articulated in our current political discourse have attached themselves to this cluster of issues around the NAFTA superhighway.
Yeah, I like that example. It's a concrete example of all these fears. So who's connecting the dots primarily? Who are the groups, the people who believe that this real proposed highway project in Texas and some other things, who's connecting these dots to say that this is the NAFTA superhighway that's the first step of this North American Union?
It draws, I would say, the majority of its sort of energy from what might be called the sort of the paleoconservative or sort of nationalist right. The John Birch Society has been very active in talking about it. Jerome Corsi, who is the author of the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth book, has a new book out called The Late Great USA, which talks about it. The Eagle Forum, which is an old conservative organization. So there's a lot of energy in a part of the conservative movement in America, which is actually been sort of very overlooked and ignored by the Bush administration, which I think also plays a factor here. Which is just a sort of a kind of old school blood and soil conservatism, which there hasn't been a lot of in the sort of, you know, represented in the sort of level of national political conversation.
Yeah. What about the other side of the political spectrum? Aren't there liberals and labor leaders and others who think this is going on too?
There are indeed. And in fact, that's one of the things that really interested me about the piece, is because it really does cross our kind of standard. It sort of interrupts our standard political taxonomies. When I've gotten emails from people who are Nation subscribers, and Nation's a progressive magazine, who were angry at me, and I've been attacked by left-wing publications for being a shill, just like I've been attacked by the John Birch Society for being a shill. There are a lot of liberals and progressives and people on the left who are concerned. Nancy Boyda, a Democratic congressman who won in 2006, somewhat improbably over a Republican incumbent, talked about the NAFTA superhighway and used it as a campaign issue. James Hoffa, the head of the Teamsters Union, has talked about it. So it really does, even though it sort of emanates, I think it first started emanating from these sort of corners of the American right, it's really an issue that crosses in all sorts of interesting ways the sort of standard political spectrum.
Yeah, and some Congress people have introduced resolutions in essence saying we're against the NAFTA superhighway.
Yes, that's right. There's a resolution. It's sponsored by a conservative by the name of Virgil Good. He's a Republican from, I want to say, North or South Carolina. And he sponsored a resolution that sort of expresses the sense of the United States House of Representatives against, you know, a NAFTA superhighway, a North American Union, which is another sort of star in the constellation of fears. It's drawn quite a few co-sponsors, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 or 30 at last count. There's also similarly, they actually passed an amendment to an appropriations bill recently, which is sponsored by California Congressman Duncan Hunter, another Republican, barring any funding for any sort of proposed NAFTA highway.
Yeah. So how can you say that there is no proposed NAFTA superhighway in terms of there's, you know, some piece of paper that has all the plans on it that some congressperson has proposed? But how can you say that that the plans don't exist? How do we know that that this isn't, you know, in the works or at least being talked about, thought about?
You know, Again, I think it's hard to. I certainly can't prove conclusively that there's no one having conversations about this. I mean, everyone who's involved in it denies it. So, you know, that's one thing. But obviously, there's no reason to take a lot of these pronouncements at face value. I tend to look more at these sort of structural things, which is if you know, getting a federal highway built in this country is a very complicated task, and it's a complicated task that involves multiple stages. I mean, you have to. The Environmental Protection Act requires a whole bunch of steps, including an environmental impact statement. And I've covered road projects, federal road projects, as a reporter in other situations. And these things crawl along at a snail's pace. I mean, there's a road in Chicago that they're sort of finally building in Dennis Hastert's district, which has received some attention. That's essentially been on the table for 30 years in official form, not just on the chalkboard of a planner. It's actually been moving through this system for 30 years. So if there are people having conversations about it, and there certainly are people having conversations about lowering transaction costs, getting, you know, business definitely wants to move across borders in a quicker manner and a less expensive manner. They want less onerous inspections. I mean, there's groups that lobby for increased investment along the what's called the sort of North American corridor to move goods back and forth. There's certainly people lobbying for all those things as sort of general principles and even as policy points. But this highway, people, you know, I think people in Iowa, when they're asking, you know, Mitt Romney about the highway, they're expecting to sort of peer out through their window and see bulldozers in the cornfields, and that's just not happening.
Many are concerned about the construction of a NAFTA superhighway, which supposedly would run from Mexico City to Canada. I think one of the routes has it going through Duluth, Minnesota, even. This would merge the three North American countries and into a union. According to our guest this hour, the problem with all this is that this highway, this project, is just a myth. There is no proposed NAFTA superhighway. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Have you heard about this? Do you have any questions for our guest? Christopher Hayes, Puffin Foundation Writing Fellow at the Nation Institute, contributing writer for The Nation magazine, and his piece in the August 27th issue is on the NAFTA superhighway, or the myth of the NAFTA superhighway. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. And according to Ben's guest after 5, we are basically hunter-gatherers lost in a jungle of burgers, lounge chairs, and TV remotes. And while the diet gurus urge us to listen to our bodies, our instincts are not designed for the food court, so we have to learn how to reprogram our bodies. He talks with the author of Wasteland, coming up after 5 o'clock. We're talking about the so-called NAFTA superhighway that would run from Mexico to Canada, and that has many, many people worried, many websites worried. And presidential candidates are being asked about this. There's a big grassroots effort to stop it. But the trouble with all this is, according to my guest, is that there is no proposed NAFTA superhighway. It's just a myth. We're talking about why this is getting so much attention, why there are so many who believe otherwise. And we welcome your questions for him. Christopher Hayes wrote about this in the current issue of The Nation. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Before we go to the phones, Christopher Hayes, talk some about this real Texas highway project that a lot of people say is just the beginning.
Yeah, it's I think a sort of crucial kind of kernel at the center of the mythology around the NAFTA superhighway. The project is called the Trans-Texas Corridor, and there was legislation passed in 2003 in Texas, unanimously actually, creating the statutory authority to basically build a series of mega highways through the state that would run parallel to existing interstates. The first was going to run parallel north-south through the most populous part of the state, which is Central Texas, along I-35. And the plans call for it to be as wide as four football fields wide, to have lanes to create the right-of-way for light rail, commercial traffic, pipelines, etc. It's also going to be the largest, if it goes through, the largest privatized toll road in the country, and it's a very novel kind of privatization scheme. State of Texas signed a contract with a Spanish concern named Cintra, who will do something what's called a build, operate, transfer deal, where they essentially build the road, and then they get the right to charge tolls and collect the tolls on it. The project has come under intense fire from all sorts of sectors. What started as sort of small rumblings of discontent has sort of grown into a massive uprising. In fact, the Texas House passed a moratorium on the project, which was vetoed by the governor, and they then passed a sort of weaker version. But it's become a massively controversial issue in the state of Texas, and it's in some senses when you go on the internet and you Google NAFTA Superhighway and you hear these features of it, you'll see the four football fields wide that always sort of circulates around. That is coming from the Trans-Texas corridor.
Why is there, though, such a thing? There is a North American Super Corridor organization. That sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, the North American Super Corridor organization, the NASCO, is... excuse me. It's headquartered in Dallas, Texas, and has a full-time staff of three. And they were, along with the Trans-Texas Corridor, I would say they were the other sort of they spurned a lot of the mythology, because they put this map on their webpage, which showed the super corridors that they envisioned. And this map started circulating, and it looked like it was a map right there for the planned NAFTA superhighway. NASCO denies this, and I think somewhat believably, given that the map that they put up on their page is just a map of I-35, an interstate which already exists, which already runs from the border, and that's the one that runs up to Duluth, and then it connects to other roads and goes to Winnipeg and Toronto. So, you know, when people saw that map, it looked like it was the plan for this new road, but really it was just mapping I-35.
Well, that's what, in fact, we just got some calls from people saying, all you have to do is go to this website and you'll see, you know, maps of where this superhighway is going to be. So those pictures of various routes have nothing to do with a NAFTA superhighway.
Right. I mean, the actual map itself really is just a map of the route that I-35 takes. And I-35 is the, and then I-69 up when you sort of get up north a bit, and I think I-94 maybe. Those are everything on that map are existing roads. It's not any sort of blueprint. I mean, you can go to an atlas and you can see that those are existing roads. Now, NASCO, they're an organization that is a membership organization, and they have all these business members, and their members want to see goods move quicker, more efficiently across borders, and there's all sorts of things that one might object to in the agenda of NASCO. It's not necessarily that they're this publicly minded organization that really wants the best for the citizens of the states through which the corridors run. No, they want to get the public to pay for infrastructure improvements that are going to make it cheaper and faster to get their goods across borders. But that's a separate thing from whether they're the center of some plan to build a NAFTA superhighway. And I would also say that if a NAFTA superhighway were being built, it would require a whole lot more clout than I think is provided currently by the three staff members in borrowed office space in Dallas of NASCO.
Yeah. Well, what about this this project in Kansas City? Tell us about that.
So that's another part that, if you Google, you'll see that there's going to be a Mexican, Mexican customs official in Kansas City. There's an organization called Kansas City Smart Port, somewhat unfortunately named from the perspective of the rumor mill. What they mean by Smart Port, and it took me a while to figure this out, because I thought they actually wanted to build a sort of a physical plant that would be a multimodal transportation port. what they mean by smart port is it's they want to sort of convert the area's economic development orientation towards multimodal transportation, which is already somewhat the case because of the location of Kansas City. There's a lot of things that come into Kansas City and then go out, so come in through rail and go out through truck. It's a kind of way station, and they want to, you know, continue to develop that. They proposed a pilot program in which they would place a Mexican customs official in Kansas City who would inspect Mexican-bound freight traffic to clear up the bottleneck at the U.S.-Mexico border. This detail sort of, again, through this kind of internet game of telephone, mutated as it sort of moved through the internet. It was this, you know, that there's going to be a part of Kansas City that was going to be Mexican soil and inviolate, and Mexican customs rules were going to, you know, we're going to reign in this small Mexican kingdom inside Kansas City. But that is not true. It was just a pilot program, and it was only for Mexican-bound freight.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll go to the phones now. Our lines had been busy, but people fell off, so there's an open line for you to talk about the myth of the NAFTA superhighway. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Supposedly, the NAFTA superhighway would run from Mexico to Canada and eventually would end up merging the three North American countries into some borderless union. According to our guest, the problem with all this is, and all the grassroots effort to stop it, is that this is a myth. It's not happening. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Carl in Lena, Illinois is with us. First, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. 8 or 10 years ago, I was on a committee kind of overlooking where they wanted to expand U.S. Route 20 or widen it, make more or less a superhighway out of it. And at one of these meetings, there were three workers for the Federal Highway Administration came to the meeting, and the discussion went around to, yes, they are planning on a NAFTA highway from Texas to Detroit and then into Canada. They said this was mainly due, they had to do work on the current highways to accommodate triple bottom semis, which I guess are legal several places, but not all places. And also, according to the NAFTA agreement, they have to allow 18-year-old truck drivers to drive these rigs. So I think there's a little bit of a safety concern here. They didn't say anything about eight lanes. They just said mostly widening on and off ramps and trying to use the current highways with upgrades.
Well, but then why? I mean, that's the current highways, isn't it, Carl?
More or less. But they did say it was required by the NAFTA agreement.
Yeah,
they have to build a highway that can let triple bottoms and 18-year-old truck drivers drive unimpeded from Mexico to Detroit area and then into Canada.
Do you know, Christopher Hayes, if there's something in the NAFTA agreement, the trade agreement, that says this kind of highway system or highway is needed?
You know, I don't know if it's required by the terms of the agreement, which if anyone has ever tried to get through or
I haven't read it.
Long. I was feeling embarrassed for a moment that I had not done my homework as a reporter, but I think Carl brings up a really good point, which is to step back for a little bit, the chronology of the term NAFTA highway has also sort of contributed. There was a lot of buzz after NAFTA passed talking about the NAFTA highway, which became the sort of conceptual term for exactly the kind of thing that Carl says the Federal Highway Administration was talking about, which was making improvements to sort of the existing highway routes. But that term, again, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like they're going to build a big, scary new road. So Carl also brings up one other sort of important part of this kind of cluster of issues that have kind of congealed into this NAFTA highway, which is the pilot program that the Bush administration has proposed allowing Mexican truckers to drive into the U.S. At first, they were going to really sort of open the floodgates to this, and then they met with a tremendous amount of resistance, and it's now been scaled back to about, I think, 200 trucks have gotten approval for this. But that's another sort of that's another part of this.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl, for the call. Dick in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Dick.
Good morning. Good program. President Bush and the Prime Minister of Canada and the Mexican president recently met in Canada. Could you tell me, do you know what came out of that meeting?
Well, were they talking about this in any way, shape, or form, do you think, Christopher Hayes?
Well, what Dick's referring to is the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which the SPP, which, again, plays a very large role in people's fears about the NAFTA highway. The SPP is a Bush administration initiative, and it's a trinational initiative between three countries. And basically what it consists of is working groups of sort of bureaucrats in all three governments talking about, coordinating on expediting customs and border crossings and also creating a sort of joint regulatory framework. Now, again, as with NASCO, I think there's reasons to object to some of the things SPP might be producing. Canadians, for instance, are scared that their generally stiffer regulations are going to be downgraded to match the U.S. The SPP meetings took place in Canada this week, and I've been on the radio a ton in Canada talking about sort of related issues because it's making a lot of news there. It's very hard to figure out what they talked about because they've been very secretive about the SPP, and I think it's a little bit of a chicken and egg issue because there's been such sort of internet backlash against the SPP. It's made the administration a little gun shy about sort of about advertising the fact that they're doing this. But that's only sort of fed further fears about what the agenda is. So there, as far as I know, there was no published agenda for these meetings aside from the general discussion of increased trinational cooperation on issues of security and commerce.
Yeah, in fact, I heard you yesterday or the day before on As It Happens from the CBC, which is a program we also have on Wisconsin Public Radio, being interviewed about this whole thing. I just was handed a website page from my producer, Martinez White, who I think was tipped off by a caller, and it is this SPP.gov website, Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, and it has on here, myth, the U.S. government working through the SPP has a secret plan to build a NAFTA superhighway, and then the fact that's listed here, the U.S. government is not planning a NAFTA superhighway. The U.S. government does not have the authority to designate any highway as a NAFTA superhighway, nor has it sought such authority, nor is it planning to seek such authority. There are private and state-level interests planning highway projects, which they themselves describe as NAFTA corridors, but these are not federally driven initiatives and are not a part of the SPP. So they had to kind of, make it known the myth and fact, too.
One of the really interesting things about this story to me is the fact that there is time and time again what you see is the same pattern playing out, which is that the people, whether they're in the SPP or NASCO or the Texas state government trying to push through this highway project, have been seemingly blindsided by the ferocity and depth and level of organization of the resistance and people's deep feelings about these issues. And it points to me what an interesting gap in the sort of outlook and worldview and political sensibilities of a lot of the people that are the policymakers or the sort of big business interests in this country and people who are not necessarily part of elite policy circles, et cetera. And I think there's a real gap in the way that people feel about increased global integration, et cetera. And what you see time and time again, the way that plays out is, you know, NASCO puts this map on their website thinking, well, you know, no one's going to think this is a NAFTA superhighway, and wham, then all of a sudden they're getting angry calls. And the same thing happens in Kansas City when they say we're going to have a Mexican customs official inspecting southbound port. That word gets out and they get angry calls. The SPP gets angry calls. So you see this backlash situation happening time and time again.
Yeah. Here's a posting on the website Human Events. The headline, Bush Administration Quietly Plans NAFTA Superhighway. Quietly but systematically, the Bush administration is advancing the plan to build a huge NAFTA superhighway, 4 football fields wide through the heart of the U.S. along Interstate 35, from the Mexican border at Laredo, Texas, to the Canadian border north of Duluth, Minnesota. Once complete, the new road will allow containers from the Far East to enter the United States through the Mexican port, bypassing the Longshoremen's Union in the process. The Mexican trucks, without the involvement of the Teamsters Union, will drive on what will be the nation's most modern highway straight into the heart of America. It goes on. Our guest is saying that this particular website is not alone, thinking there is this plan for a huge NAFTA superhighway. He says it's not the case. This is a myth. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Christopher Hayes writes about the myth of the NAFTA superhighway in The Nation magazine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. President Bush argued yesterday that leaving Iraq now would provoke the kind of horrendous bloodbath that followed the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam. And after 9, Kathleen and her guest will talk about troop withdrawal, the frustration with the Iraqi prime minister, and more coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about why so many people believe there are plans in the works to build a NAFTA superhighway connecting Mexico to Canada as a first step in some sort of North American union. Talking with a guest about why this belief exists and why it's a myth. And our next caller is Alex in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to the guest.
Good morning.
You can't turn on one day of C-SPAN Washington Journal without hearing something about the NAFTA superhighway and Ron Paul. And not that I listen to C-SPAN Washington Journal. I'm a loyal Wisconsin Public Radio person.
You're allowed to watch C-SPAN too.
But aside from the North American Union of the three countries, aside of that, are there any other complaints about the NAFTA superhighway? Because I think if I were an industrialist, and I'm not, but if I were, you know, this would be a good way of getting very cheap goods from Mexico all the way to Canada. And I'll listen on the radio. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alex, I think that's a really good question. You point to a distinction which is important in discussing this. One is the factual substantive basis of the NAFTA highway, whether it exists or not, and it doesn't. And then the next question to have a sort of substantive discussion about is, well, if someone were planning something like an NAFTA superhighway, or if someone wanted a North American Union or some increased measures of integration between the three countries, is that on the merits a good or bad idea? It's hard to have those two distinct debates because they've all been wrapped up into one, so you end up with the factual discussion about whether the U.S. is actually planning a NAFTA highway. I think there is a very fruitful discussion to be had about the merits and drawbacks of increased integration between the three countries. He's right. There certainly members of the business community, a lot of them, want increased integration for the reason that it'll make it cheaper to move goods and commodities and capital back and forth across the borders. There are other people who want increased integration because they point to the European Union, which has pursued an integration model which has paired economic integration with integration of governance and regulation. And so there are a lot of people who say it makes a lot more sense to not only integrate your commerce and to allow capital to move back and forth across borders and commodities, but also to have some sort of unified framework to regulate and govern those transactions. That discussion is actually the discussion, I think, that is the discussion that needs to happen at the political level. But it's not happening right now, partly because you have one side of the discussion who are the people, say, industrialists, in Alex's phrase, and other people who want increased integration. They're not dealing with the level of blowback that's happening among the populace. And then you have, on the other side, people like Human Events and Jerome Corsi and the John Birch Society who are spending all their time intimating these dark conspiracies as opposed to making a substantive argument about what the pathway should look like.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting email. It's got a couple of misimpressions in it that I think brings up a couple of different issues. Rosalind from Unity in an email: even after listening to this guest from The Nation magazine, we have doubts about his sincerity, because it's our understanding that The Nation is a conservative Republican publication, and we have had painful lessons and have learned not to believe what Republicans have to say. You're not The Nation is not a Republican conservative.
No, The Nation is a liberal progressive weekly magazine. It's the oldest continuously published political mm-hmm. magazine in the country. It was founded by abolitionists after the Civil War. I certainly am. Have never been accused of being a Republican before. the magazine is a very. It's been very, very critical of the Bush administration, the Republican agenda, neoliberal market reforms. Very critical of the NAFTA agreement and subsequent free trade agreements. I've been critical of those agreements. So in terms of where we're coming from in the political spectrum, that we're pretty firmly planted on the left.
Let me ask you to put on the psychologist's hat here a little bit, and maybe that last line is also why there is we don't trust our government. So even if government officials deny, we don't believe them.
That is absolutely, Joy, I think, at the center of all this, and understandable. I mean, in my own opinion, given what's happened over the last 6 years. In fact, there's a point in the article in which I quote a spokesperson for the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the SPP. Mm-hmm. He says, mostly what we do is. He gives an example of the kind of things they work on. He says, for instance, baby food is sold in Canada in a bunch of different sizes, and in the U.S. in just two sizes. So we're trying to, pick a few, right? And I sort of let that hang there. And there was a writer in Canada, a liberal writer in Canada, who criticized me and said, well, that's that. That settles the matter. You get a quote from a Bush spokesperson. And I think it's a fair criticism. I think it's actually a reason that people, despite no extent of laying out the facts seems to convince people, because there is this very deep ingrained skepticism about what the motivations of the government are, and more specifically, who has their levers on the hand of government. Whether when the government, whether it's the Texas state government or the federal government, when they push an agenda, whether that agenda is motivated by broad popular support or it's motivated by a handful of essentially corporate interests. And there are good reasons to be skeptical of the pronouncements of the government, and also good reasons to believe that public initiatives of any sort in this era, particularly in my own editorial opinion emanating from the White House the last 6 years, are largely the result of some set of elite interests.
I have to admit, I saw another writer, I don't remember if he was from the right or the left, criticizing your piece in saying that, to go to the website of the North America Super Corridor Organization, where it denies that there are any plans for a NAFTA superhighway, answering all these questions. Mm-hmm. There is no proposed new NAFTA mm-hmm. superhighway. Mm-hmm. That's not proof that there's no proposed new NAFTA superhighway.
No, certainly not. I mean, the denials are not proof, and we, that's true in every respect. I think the substantive. The facts on the ground, I think, are persuasive that there is no NAFTA superhighway for the reasons that I mentioned before. The sheer fact of what a supposed NAFTA superhighway would entail from the perspective of the bureaucratic process through which it would have to travel. The frequently asked questions from the NASCO website, which you mentioned, I sort of put in the article in some senses for a bit of humor, because it's such a sort of funny document insofar as they set up the FAQ with a series of questions. Are you part of a conspiracy to build a NAFTA superhighway? Will the NAFTA superhighway be 4 football fields wide? Is the first part of the NAFTA superhighway in Texas? And every answer is, there is no proposed NAFTA superhighway. Are you part of a conspiracy? There is no proposed NAFTA superhighway. Will it be 4 football fields wide? There is no proposed NAFTA superhighway. It's kind of bludgeoning technique for denying.
I is NASCO a part of the secret conspiracy? Absolutely not. We welcome the opportunity to talk about our organization.
Yeah, right.
Michael in Danbury. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, good morning, Joy, and to your guests. I guess it's a little disappointing that the guest hasn't read the NAFTA agreement, because there are obligations between all three parties that have to be addressed to streamline, and whether or not there's a massive road that's going to be laid out really doesn't matter. The fact is that 70% of the United States foreign trade exists between Mexico and Canada. And for that and because of that, the NAFTA agreement takes the initiative to move us more directly into how do we streamline and make that more efficient and cost-effective. And, you know, so therefore streets and roads and highways must be prepared in such a way as that commercial traffic that feeds us and them are going to have to be addressed. So, you know, whether there's a conspiracy or not doesn't matter. There's a fundamental need for that traffic. And the last thing I'd like to share is that as the globalization process occurs with the Center of Economic Development shifting to the east, where is the United States going to get its new customers? Should it look 3,000 and 6,000 miles away, or look at the 150 million people that are just south of the border who have virtually little to nothing that are really not unlike East and West Germany joining together, where they picked up 18 million new customers? We need to look at that economic growth opportunity to grow and develop the North American continent. And it just is pragmatic and sensible to start moving in that direction, and NAFTA takes us in that step, despite its negative and positive impact.
Right. But, Michael, I mean, our guest wrote a piece on the superhighway. You know, it's not on all of this stuff. But he's saying that, conspiracy or not, there is a need for this kind of highway, Christopher Hayes.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't quite tell if he thinks it's a good idea to have this increase.
Sounded like he thought it was a good idea.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the interesting things he points to is that, you know, and this gets thrown around a lot, the top two are trading partners, our top trading partners, Canada, and then I think actually third is Mexico after China. You know, there's a lot of goods. I mean, the Canadian border, the Detroit-Windsor crossing, is the busiest border crossing in the entire country. And there's a lot of things that we both buy and sell from Canada. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. The question, I think, around something like NAFTA is the degree to which the agreements that are for the putative purpose of streamlining efficiencies of trade smuggle in a lot of other things, which people don't feel like they have a say-so over. And that I think, gets at the heart of it. I mean, I don't know if the caller has read NAFTA, or I don't know how many people in the U.S. have read the actual agreement or know particularly what's in there. I know that in the recent FT, in the proposed Central American Free Trade Agreement, which did pass, there's all sorts of, for instance, intellectual property provisions. The agreement is 1,200 pages long. It's unlikely that a lot of the congressmen who voted to pass it into law had read the agreement. So the issue more is, I think, a basic issue of democratic accountability when it comes to a lot of these trade deals.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael, for the call. I'm going to go to Nelson in northern Wisconsin, because I think he has a different point of view. Nelson, go on.
Yes, I'm the guy who called about a month or so ago and mentioned this, and nobody on WPR seemed to know about it. And my biggest concern isn't what the highway is. The fact is, we're a free country. We're open. We've got a president who had a partner who from Texas, and he's now gone. I'm sure he's still involved in this thing. This whole thing seems to have been done secretly. That's the aspect I don't like. I think there ought to be a great campaign to make this a national news thing so the people know what's going on.
Yeah, well, Nelson,
and you're helping right now do it.
Yeah. But we're saying that it's a myth.
No, it isn't a myth. True thing that they've got planned.
Nelson, you haven't been with us all hour, because the whole hour we're talking about how it's
yeah,
everybody
now you
thinks.
Are. Yeah, you're one of the few people that are talking about. Do you see it in the daily papers or anything?
No. I think that the caller points out that there's this huge disconnect between the amount of attention this has received, you know, on talk radio, on the internet, and other platforms, and the publication of the John Birch Society, Human Events, etc. WorldNet Daily is one website that covers it a lot, and the mainstream media. And there's this real huge gap between the two, which I think is, you know, again, represents a kind of deeper gap about the sort of perspectives.
So you're saying, Christopher Hayes, that the mainstream media is not doing a lot with this right now.
No, because, you know, again,
they're not doing stories like this is a myth.
No, right. They're not. And because it isn't even crossing their radar screen. In fact, you know, I talked to someone from a reporter who had written a story about this a few years ago for a magazine, a trade magazine for truckers. And he said he was getting he got a call from a New York Times reporter a few weeks ago who was traveling with the candidates, Republican candidates, and they were getting questions about it. And he was, you know, what the heck is this? It hasn't gotten much mainstream attention. And more to the point, and to sort of maybe zoom out a little bit, not just the specific mythology of the highway, concerns about a North American Union or a unified currency and those things. It's really startling to me the difference in the amount of press attention that just the Security and Prosperity Partnership meeting has received in Canada versus the U.S., having now done a number of Canadian radio mm-hmm. shows. It's a huge story in Canada. It's on the front page of the Toronto Globe and Mail, partly because they're meeting in Canada, but partly because I think there's just a much more skeptical bearing on the part of the Canadian press towards these kinds of initiatives. Now, whether the SPP is good on the merits or not, I think the U.S. press would do well and would serve the citizens of the U.S. and its readers better if there was a lot more scrutiny and skepticism over these sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I think it would actually help dispel some of the mythology at the same time. So I think it would be two birds with one stone.
Right. Well, thank you, Nelson, for the call. And I don't know who you suggested this to a couple of months ago. I know we did many months ago, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, did a program sort of a pro-con, and it was mainly on this this project in Texas that some people say is just the beginning of the NAFTA superhighway. That, again, that Texas highway project is very real, Christopher Hayes, but that it's not the first leg of the NAFTA superhighway.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. Let's try one last caller, Janice in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, good morning. And I am a Republican, but didn't vote for the war, believe me. However, this is, to me, a ridiculous thing with NAFTA when we cannot even fix our own highways and roads around this area. And, you know, the infrastructure is so bad. I can't even get them to fix a hole in the road. I've talked to MnDOT and Wisconsin DOT. And no, we can't do that. If you can't fix it, we have to take it all up. It's a federal thing and tear it all up. I said, you don't fix a hole when you just have the hole. I mean, it's unreal. I'm so frustrated over here. I want to freak out.
Can't fill a pothole. How can this country build a NAFTA superhighway, Christopher Hayes?
Janice raises a great point, and it's something that was driven home in the tragic bridge collapse recently. Is that the state of the public infrastructure in the country is awful. I mean, numerous reports by different civil engineering bodies from over the last 10 years have come to the same conclusion, which is that there's a complete lack of public investment in the basics of public infrastructure. There's mm-hmm. sinkholes all over the country popping up if you look through the news. And Janice is right that one of the major complaints in the state of Texas over the Trans-Texas Corridor is exactly this complaint, that the existing infrastructure is being ignored in yeah. favor of this massive new project. And what lies behind that is a sort of tax starvation that's happened at the state level over the last 20 years.
We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Mahat Choi. I appreciate it.
Christopher Hayes wrote a piece, contributing writer for The Nation magazine on the NAFTA superhighway. This is the Ideas Network.